Hello, everyone. My name is Sean Sally. I'm at the Jornada Research Unit in Las Cruces, and with my colleague Jeff Herrick, we've been looking at hand texture. Hand texture is one of those things that I think pops up every 5 or 10 years as we have access to different databases, or we could tell a different story. But as I've found, it's also a topic that there's a lot of really strong opinions about. So it's been pretty exciting to do some of this work. May not be new to this crowd, but soil texture is one of the most important properties influencing process, function, and properties. Hand texture is considered a fundamental skill used to classify and understand the behavior and management of the soil. But due to the cost and time of laboratory texture analysis, that's led to recent proposals that these hand estimates can replace lab texture altogether. But in our experience, we found that a lot of people using hand texture are people with limited university or soil experience with training, such as ecologists, early career field scientists with no training outside of a workshop before a field season, or citizen scientists who the training and experience is unknown or difficult to assess. And I want to talk about citizen science briefly because it's this really emergent field within our discipline. The whole point is the citizen acts as an observer or an experimenter, and the goal is to crowdsource this data collection. But what's not necessarily talked about is also expanding access to science-based interpretations, which is, I think, an important component of citizen science. The biggest driver of this movement is access to smartphone with GPS. But as I said earlier, education, training, and experience is difficult to assess within this movement. Some of the more successful examples of citizen science includes from the Cornell Ornithology Lab, eBird for bird watching, the National Phenology Network to document plant life cycles, or some other interesting niche studies such as a firefly watch to document the decline of fireflies in the United States. There's a number of citizen science movements within our discipline. Here's a few, What's in Your Backyard, Soil Health Survey, some international ones, My Soil, OPAL, and the funding of this project, the Land Potential Knowledge System. Reviewing soil hand texture studies, we found going back to 1975, 14 studies, with multiple studies from Nigeria and Arizona, which for some reason are these intellectual hubs of hand texture analysis. Most of the work has looked at professional soil scientists, although some work specifically in Arizona has looked at student assessments and how accurate students get at these classes over time. Within the last couple decades, a lot of that work's focused on percent sand, silt, and clay estimates, and newer studies have looked at reviewing texture class breaks, like in Australia, where they use a different texture class system, or pedotransfer function development here in the United States. I want to highlight one of the earliest studies, which was published in Proceedings from this society, because it's really indicative of a lot of the work that's been done on hand texture analysis. This study was conducted on about 600 samples in Maryland using the 12 USDA soil classes. They found, and a lot of the work since, that there's an absolute accuracy of 50%. Which sounds really bad, so a lot of the work has gone in to create this wiggle room. And they used a arbitrary four standard deviation around each texture class boundary to improve that accuracy to 67%. As with most of the rest of the work, if one particulate or particle dominates the sample, such as a silty, clay, or sandy sample, the accuracy is relatively high. And in the loamy categories, or in the case of loamy sand, where it's just a small portion of the diagram, the accuracy is low. But this also highlights where silt and sandy clay are usually absent from this analysis, just because of its occurrence in nature is a little rare. But there was this real provocative paper a couple years ago from a data set in Germany that said that hand texture could replace laboratory analysis altogether. And we had a couple of data sets that we had that we thought said otherwise. So the research objectives of this paper was to evaluate hand texture estimates by occupation and training. We looked at professional soil scientists who were academically trained, seasonal field scientists who had minimal training, and then citizen scientists who had even less training. But we also wanted to look at the specific methodology that's used and how especially people who don't have a lot of experience get at hand texture estimates. And we found some pretty interesting results. We took advantage of three data sets. I've already heard people name drop the NCSS soil characterization database. We had 230,000 samples. It's a global database going back to the late 20s of USDA and cooperators. And the assumption is that most of these texture estimates were from individuals who were academically trained and had professional experience. The seasonal field scientist data set was a much, much smaller data set. It was part of the BLM AIM, the Assessment Inventory and Monitoring program. And this data set was from Western US lands in 2015. And most of the individuals had no university trained experience and just agency workshop, which was 2 to 3 days of soil training. And the last data set we used was from a Namibia communal lands assessment where they used the Land Potential Knowledge System suite of apps. And the only training they received was a half-day training using the USDA ribbon chart walkthrough. The analysis we conducted used a confusion matrix using overall accuracy and kappa, which sometimes is a better metric for unbalanced class sizes. But we also used our own wiggle room analysis of overall accuracy adjacent. So if a class was a loamy sand, we would include sand and sandy loam in that, consider that an equal agreement. And we also did a conditional probability of the hand texture methodology, which I'll get into after a bit. Jumping right to the results, the accuracy of the National Cooperative Soil Survey scientists, I wrote down these numbers, was 66%, which was much higher than the BLM AIM crews and the citizen scientists, 41 and 37%. And the kappa values of those, which take into account the unbalanced class sizes, were quite a bit lower. With the wheel room that we included, that moved the Cooperative Soil Survey scientists to a 91% accuracy, and much higher within the citizen science. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit when I show the results of that particular data set. But that was really a bias of mostly sampling sandy soils. And here's the weighted kappa with those results. There's a lot of data shown here. So the red box, if you could see it, is the laboratory determined class, and the gradient pattern is the hand texture results that were estimated in the field. And similar to previous studies, when clay, sand, or silt loam dominated the sample, there was higher accuracy. And the loamy categories had a moderate accuracy. Even the lowest accuracies were silt and sandy clay. And they are a smaller number in the data set, but they're also a rare occurrence in nature. And we feel that that's the reason for the lower accuracies within those texture classes. Because we used the Cooperative Soil Survey, we wanted to look at it based upon soil order. This has some really interesting interpretations. The oxisols have the lowest overall accuracy, and that's due, we feel, to kaolinitic clays, which are less sticky and then produce shorter ribbons. The gelisols, as was mentioned earlier, doesn't represent a large proportion of the data set. There was only 400 samples, and the poor accuracy was driven mostly in the loamy and clayey texture classes. Andisols, we've known for a while that filled clay classes have caused problems because the clays do not disperse and they smear instead of stick. Looking a little deeper into the riddisols, poor performance across almost every texture class, and we feel that's driven due to salts like carbonates or gypsum. Histosols, we looked at the mineral horizons in histosols, and that had even smaller numbers in the data set of 370. And the poor accuracy was driven mostly by loams and clays. Looking specifically at the citizen science data set, we saw similar results where higher accuracy was in clay and sand. But in this case, the SILTI classes had very performing, and the LOAM classes. And that's been documented with university students where that's the greatest distance between accuracy, specifically in the SILT-LOAM class, where a professional could estimate it around 60. I think our data showed around 70%, and students estimated around 15%, which is similar to the results that we saw here. Interesting, even though the lab texture showed 22 samples in the LOAM class, there was 0%. So LOAM is one of those very difficult texture classes to someone who doesn't have experience to estimate. Because we had these different data sets, we wanted to evaluate the methodology associated with it, and most people in this room are familiar with the ribbon method, the walkthrough that was first published by Thien in 1979, where you start with a moist cast trying to form a sand or a ball, and then its ability to ribbon, followed by estimate of gritty class. Because we have this nice matrix of 3x3, we wondered if we could do a conditional probability based upon if the class is incorrect, what's the overall probability that it's correct within the same row or column? So essentially guessing or looking at the data to see if they're getting the ribbon wrong or the grittiness wrong. And the professional data set, we saw relatively no difference, but when we looked at the both the combined BLM and citizen science data, we saw that they were getting ribbon length consistently wrong, but they were getting the grittiness class correct at the same rate, at least as the professional soil scientist. And sort of projecting this to the next step, one thing that can be done to improve someone who has limited experience is moving the grittiness check ahead of the ribbon. And that's one of the things that we're exploring. If getting an accurate estimate of texture class is the goal, then there's also other redundant or techniques that you can do that the international methodology, I think, has applied, such as the worm or other tests that I think we've all kind of picked up along the way. The main conclusions that we had with the study, that like most of the previous studies before, that hand texture observers must practice against known samples. They have to calibrate for that local variability, clay mineralogy, and periodically recalibrate. Our analysis showed that professional soil scientists estimated texture class with a much higher accuracy than previously reported, so good job. The seasonal field scientists and citizen scientists have estimated the texture class with a similar accuracy that's been reported by university students. And then with conditional probability analysis, when novice observers misclassify texture class, we feel it's more likely due to the ribbon length over the grittiness. Some of the next steps for citizen science. The current model for land PKS is to do the simple walkthrough provided by Thien, where it's the ball, the ribbon, and then the grit class. The goal is to match the land potential based upon EPIC or APEX modeling, or even matching the soil class, such as soil series. So the real question is, how close do we need to match the soil class, or can we incorporate other things like soil color into this algorithm? We feel that there's a higher confidence in sand and clay estimates and a lower confidence in the loam and silt class estimates with these citizens science. And we're looking into ways to reinvent the field or change up the texture class flowchart. That's one thing that we're asking a lot of different people of different tricks that you've picked up along the way to see if there's ways that these can be improved for people who don't have the experience or the ability to calibrate with those samples. So that is it. Thank you.
We have time for about one question for Sean.
Have you considered adding data from collegiate soil judging contests to your data set?
That would be fantastic. Is that a publicly available data set?
I think we could make it available if we could figure out how to do it.
That's a lot of data.
Absolutely. I'd be willing to look at that. I did want to say that because Land PKS provided funds for this project, there is a working group at noon in room two today, if you're interested in learning about at least our take on citizen science and things that we're doing. I only say that because I see Jeff there. But thank you.
All right. Thanks, Sean.